Welcome back, Peter Schiff.
Well, thanks for welcoming me back.
There's a lot of crypto guys here, and I'm wondering if some of their condos in Condado might go down in price. They came here because they expected the capital gains to continue, because a lot of the crypto guys had big gains in 2017, and they expected them to continue indefinitely. And of course, the market's collapsed so far in 2018, but I think we're just getting started with the bear market. I think we have a lot more to go down. You know, a lot of the people, too, with the cryptos made huge gains, and then they lost back all their gains this year. I mean, I didn't get in when it was 10, 20 bucks. I mean, I knew about it early on. I just didn't realize the bubble would get as big as it did, clearly. But I recognized the flaws from the very beginning. So I knew that it wouldn't work. And ultimately, it's going to collapse much further than this. But I underestimated the potential of this story to gain traction. And, you know, the guys that got in early, I think, I mean, did a masterful job of public relations and manipulating this market higher. And so clearly the guys that got in real cheap just made once-in-a-lifetime gains, just made an absolute killing. But unfortunately, for that to happen, a lot of other people had to come in late and overpay. And so I think the gains that a lot of the early adopters had, unfortunately, come at the expense of people who jumped into the party later. And that, you know, that includes people that bought at much lower levels than what we're at now. There's a lot more air that's coming out of this bubble. And, you know, so if you're hodling your Bitcoin at 4,000, you know, whatever it is, and if a year from now it's under 1,000 or maybe way under 1,000, why hodl? Why not? And if you're so in love with Bitcoin, you can always buy it back much cheaper. I mean, you don't have to go down with the ship. Yeah, I'm not trying to rub salt in the wound. I'm trying to give people useful information that could save them money.
You know, crypto in 2010, 2011, 2013, and I think again in 20, maybe 14, 84 to 94% pullbacks. Right now, Bitcoin is only at around 85%. There is an intense bottleneck on this market, making it incredibly challenging for everyday folks, for the herd, to participate, because you can't convert your currency. It's easy for you, it's easy for many of our listeners, but for the typical person out there around the world, it's not really easy for them to convert dollars into Bitcoin.
Chris, you don't want to get into this, you know, and a lot of people are making this mistake of, okay, yeah, Bitcoin went from 100 to 20, and then it made a new high. Don't think those moves equate with going from 20,000 to 3,500. You know, the dollars involved is much greater than that. So to recover from the bursting of this, I think those 80% moves when Bitcoin was kind of obscure and very few people knew about it, and it was kind of like a hobby and people were throwing their play money in it, that was all part of the buildup of the bubble. That was part of the bull market. That bull market is over. This is not the same type of decline. And also, you know, one of the things is that a lot of the people in Bitcoin were counting on the institutional money to come in to drive the market higher. And one of the reasons they thought the institutions would come in was because they thought that the extreme volatility of the past was over, that Bitcoin was now a store of value, and that, you know, it wasn't going to collapse 80 or 90% again. But now, if you have the Bitcoin story being, well, you know, 80, 90% declines are just going to continue to happen, and that's just par for the course with Bitcoin. You have to be willing to allow it to go down 90%. Very few institutions are going to want to participate in an asset class that, you know, they're being told up front could collapse 80 to 90% at any moment, and that's just how it is. And then you have to hope that it comes back, because, you know, hoping is not a strategy, because if you're hoping that it's going to happen, it may not. It may not happen again. So I think this type of volatility will scare out a lot of the potential money that was thinking about coming in the future. So if you really believe in cryptocurrencies, let this bear market wash out. We need to have capitulation. If cryptos are going to go up in the future, first we have to capitulate the hodlers. They need to throw in the towel. We need to see people like, there needs to be blood in the streets. It's not there yet. This market could fall much further before we get that. And so, you know, if that's the case, you can always buy your cryptos back, you know, when nobody wants them. And all the hodlers have given up and they wish they never heard of Bitcoin. So far away from that.
From a technical perspective, a bubble tends to at least return to its starting point. That starting point was 2 years ago, the beginning of 2017, we saw that 900 run to 10,000. So you could, as you say, return to at least 1,000, 900 to 1,000.
If you look at the chart of something like that, I mean, there's nothing beneath. I mean, that thing just looks like a bottomless pit. You know, you look at all the other cryptos, too. There's like 2,000 of these things.
Let's look at the market cap. Wasn't it something like $500 billion, $700 billion, approaching $1 trillion at the peak? I mean, this is an enormous sum that has evaporated that the shorts are walking away with.
Yeah, Chris, think about all the companies, the startups that are burning cash because they're not making a profit. And the only way they can pay their rents and pay their salaries and interest if they borrowed money is to liquidate crypto, because they can't pay their rent in crypto.
Look at the payrolls.
Their payroll. And even if their employees are all gung-ho about crypto, they can't use crypto to buy their food and to pay their rent. And so there's going to be a lot of cryptocurrencies for sale. And remember, the miners now are losing money by mining. They've got to sell crypto, more cryptos out of their inventory to keep the lights on.
That's an interesting story, because while right now most people are pulling the plugs on their machines, especially the ASIC mining and GPU mining, but that's really a double-edged sword. What's hitting the market are the miners. The miners are the number one sellers at any given time because they've got to keep the lights on. Initially, you're going to have sort of across the singularity threshold where everybody's got to pull the plug, and that pushes price down.
And investors are pissed and they've lost money. And I think the government is going to force a lot of the issuers to refund the money to the investors. And of course, how are they going to get the money? They've got to liquidate crypto. You know, there was a big bankruptcy of a company out west in Washington. I forget the name. And they had recently done an ICO and they raised about $20, $25 million. And they also borrowed tens of millions of dollars. And when they filed for bankruptcy, stuff blows up. You know, people are looking to sell, and there's not going to be the buying. You need new money to come in to enable people to sell. And, you know, people aren't going to rush to catch a falling knife. I mean, if Bitcoin can go from 20,000 to 3,500, it can go, you know, now it's at 4,200 about, but it can go from 4,200 to 400. I mean, there's just as much risk buying Bitcoin at 4,000 as there was at 20,000. But now that you have all this downward momentum, you see, it's scary. The thing was, when Bitcoin was going up, everybody was afraid to miss out. There was so much greed and FOMO going around that everybody had to jump in. You don't have that anymore. Now it's not fear of missing out. It's fear that it's going to keep falling. So there's no reason for people to rush in, but there are people that have crypto that need to sell.
We had that $6,000 floor on Bitcoin that held up for nearly a year. And when that broke, we just told everybody, you got to get out of the way of this thing.
Markets rarely give you that much time. The situation where it's hanging out there, and the volume was really low. And so you knew if all of a sudden some big selling came in, there was just not the volume to support it. But yeah, I mean, I think some of the Bitcoin people were kind of hanging their hats on this support and this, like, it had found its level and it's lost its volatility. And of course, now they're trying to rationalize everything. And, you know, a lot of people too used to be saying, well, Bitcoin's a store of value. Well, now they admit it's not a store of value. And a lot of the guys that used to say Bitcoin was, you know, it was going to be an alternative form of payments, a medium of exchange, I hear a lot of guys now saying, well, it doesn't really work as a medium of exchange, but now it's not a store of value either.
I mean, if you take a look at Bitcoin versus a major transaction, and there's a lot of evidence to support the thesis, store of value out the window. But as far as a medium of exchange, you know, we had Tim Draper on the show, and he pointed out, and we talked about, where people have sent $20 million in Bitcoin in just a matter of minutes, and it cost them $15, $20 versus $15, $20,000, 5 to 6 days to clear, and all kinds of regulatory and reviews and nonsense and paperwork and all these other third parties, you know, involved.
When it comes to payments, I'm not talking about one person who has Bitcoin giving it to another person who wants Bitcoin. That's very easy. That's one thing that Bitcoin does well. If I want to give you a thousand Bitcoin or 10 Bitcoin, whatever, and you want them, I can take them from my wallet and send them to your wallet. Where it's not good is if you want to go to the store and you want to buy, and you want to, and you have Bitcoin in your wallet, and you want the cigarettes are for sale, you know, the pack. There, it's very inefficient. It's a very cumbersome.
Yeah, it's a nascent technology. In Japan, it's an accepted national currency.
They said it could be used as legal tender, but they don't price products in Bitcoin. I mean, you can't price anything in Bitcoin because it's much too volatile. So the only way that you could buy something with Bitcoin is to convert it to yen or euros or dollars to make the exchange.
The way they're doing it is just marking it up. Okay, there's a big premium. So yes, you're correct. It's not really plausible for everyday transactions at the moment. But there's a lot of competing currencies that are filling that void, that have virtually no transaction fees. They have a more stable price that had been designed that way and makes them very convertible into Bitcoin or the national currency or a reserve currency.
I mean, the thing with gold money, and it just shows you how there's so little demand for a real payment system, because what gold money really could do, but they're not even developing that, is you can basically buy a pack of chewing gum and pay for it with gold. You can price cigarettes in gold. Gold's not that volatile. And the actual cost of buying and selling gold is actually lower than credit cards. But right now, there's just not a lot of demand from customers or merchants for payments in gold. I mean, people still have faith in fiat currencies, and one day they won't, and then maybe gold money can roll that platform out. But what gold money does now is it gives you the ability to buy gold online at 0.5% over spot, and they will give you a free debit card. And so to the extent that you decide that you need to buy something and you want to use your gold to do it, you can basically access the gold that you have stored in a Brinks vault by using a debit card, and then you can buy merchandise where your gold is converted to dollars or euros or yen, depending on where you are, and then you can buy merchandise. It's a much more effective way than converting your Bitcoin into dollars to buy merchandise, because it's actually lower transaction costs, and between the time you deposit your gold and go spend it, the odds of it collapsing in value are very slim. Whereas you have no idea, I mean, you could put money into Bitcoin and you have no idea what it's going to be worth when you go to spend it. I mean, and that is the problem is you can put a large percentage of your net worth in gold and you could sleep well at night, right? I mean, you know that day to day, gold's not going to lose 10, 20, 30% of its value. You know, it's just not going to happen. It just hasn't happened. I mean, yes, if you wait for gold to skyrocket and it doubles or triples in a year and then you buy it, yeah, it could pull back quite a bit. But under normal circumstances, it's not that volatile. Whereas, you know, Bitcoin can, you know, have a big move in either direction, of course.
There are times when decent people need to move across borders, okay, and they can't take anything in their pockets with them, you know, other than some bubble gum. All you have to do is memorize a 12-word passcode, and you could move $15 million across borders with just maybe a 3% expense when you reach your new area. The only place it's written down is in your mind. There's never been a time in history where that was possible, and it is now.
I think there are a lot of people that got in, a lot of the whales, and the main goal that they have is to drum up demand so that they can sell. It's massive pump and dump. And so there are a lot of people that are just trying to get new buyers to come in and with visions of wealth and, you know, Lambos and all sorts of stuff so that they can sell.
And when it washes out, there are use cases. The need for the crypto and, of course, the blockchain is not going to evaporate. It's going to morph here. The whole industry won't disappear any more than, you know, the dot-com where NASDAQ was down 89% from peak to trough, 2003. You know, it's not as though Amazon disappeared overnight. They just washed out the weak hands and the useless business model.
Chris, the dot-coms, at least they were companies. They had the potential to make a profit. I mean, a lot of them never made a profit, but at least people were buying actual companies that had the potential of making money. When people are buying these cryptocurrencies, they're buying nothing. They're buying pipe dreams. Will cryptocurrencies come back in a different form? Maybe. Maybe if there's a form where they're backed by something tangible, where there's a way to preserve, you know, but they're not going to be get-rich-quit scheme to be where you get rich a cryptocurrency. Where you'll get rich, potentially, is building a business that can utilize them. But no one is going to get rich just buying any cryptocurrency and hodling it. That's what got all the greed going. It's not that easy. You just can't buy a digital thing and think you're going to become a millionaire or a billionaire, willing to buy in at higher prices. I don't know if it's actually correlated, because I see days when all the FANG stocks are up and Bitcoin is down. And then I see days when all the FANG stocks are down and Bitcoin is down. I mean, Bitcoin generally goes down no matter what the FANGs are doing at this point. It's better to have something that's negatively correlated to something. Then it gives you some value.
The key point that I think you're making here that is valid, unlike a typical business that has a fiduciary responsibility to its shareholders, you know, that true equity, if you will, responsibility, and all the corporate ties, It is a different investment than the typical equity, but it's also a frontier. There will be tulips here. If you recognize that now we've gone from 1 in 10 that's going to hit it to maybe 1 in 10,000, maybe at some point there will be a buying opportunity.
An asset, if it's a real estate, it can pay rent. If it's a stock, it can pay a dividend. If it's a bond, it can pay interest. Bitcoin pays nothing. In theory, a Bitcoin business, a crypto business, could generate profits. But, you know, all the crypto stocks have collapsed. They're all down 95, 96, 98%. So those things have imploded. But people like to say, well, gold doesn't pay any dividends, which is true, unless you loan it out. I mean, you can loan your gold and somebody can pay you interest on a gold loan. But gold in and of itself, if it just sits there, it doesn't pay any interest. But what it does do is it stores the value of the gold itself, because gold is a valuable element, metal, commodity that is used in all sorts of things. And so if I save my gold, that gold can be used to make something in the future. And so what you're storing is the potential to turn that gold, whether it's into jewelry. For example, you could buy some beautiful jewelry at Menet.com, right, which is Gold Money's kind of sister company, where you can buy jewelry based on the weight of gold, which is a great way to buy it, by the way. You know, I can turn my gold into jewelry in the future, or I can turn it into any other, you know, I could use it in electronics, I could use it in aerospace, I could use it in medicine. There are things that you can use gold for. Even if you store it for 1,000 years, you know, there are very few commodities that you can store that long that aren't going to rot or decay, and now they're gone. But all of the value that you have in gold will be preserved indefinitely, so it's a good store of value. But in Bitcoin, it doesn't throw off any interest, any dividends, any rents. I can't make something with it.
There are so many use cases. We've already covered two or three of the key use cases. This idea that there's no tangibility there, that's the same argument someone might make about a financial instrument. This is peer-to-peer money. There's never been anything like it before. One of the key aspects, the appeal there, is the low number that was initially created compared with Ethereum, where there's hundreds of millions, okay? Go watch a Sotheby's auction on YouTube and see some of the artwork being auctioned there. Bastier. Okay, just sold $450 million. Supply and demand is a key component of some of these. And the fact that the first mover, the first use case was Bitcoin, obviously.
If in the future there is some kind of peer-to-peer digital currency network where people can make these kind of transfers, it will happen. But none of the people that own any of these cryptocurrencies are going to benefit from that. It is not the owner. They're not going to make the system where it's the token that has all the value. It's gonna be, you know, the system. It's like, you know, it's like a car on a highway. It's the highway that might have the value. The car is just a depreciating asset that uses the highway.
You're making a great point, but listen, if you're going to make that point, Ethereum is a Turing complete piece of software that is remarkable in comparison to Bitcoin, and it has so many use cases that we don't have the time. If we had an hour, we couldn't even bullet list the use cases on Ethereum. So I'm not trying to convince people to buy it, but that does not diminish its usefulness. So let's let the bubble deflate.
Gold's in a bubble in the other direction. It's in a bubble of pessimism. Nobody wants to buy gold. In fact, right, for all the time that Bitcoin was going up and gold was going nowhere, that was part of the appeal of Bitcoin, because some of the frustrated gold bugs saw Bitcoin going way up and they were stuck in the slow lane. And they're like, hey, let me buy Bitcoin as a safe haven, as a hedge against inflation and fiat currencies. And so Bitcoin was stealing gold's thunder. Well, you know, I think gold's going to take that thunder back, because I think, you know, while Bitcoin broke down, I do expect gold to break out. I mean, gold has been basing for many, many years, not just, you know, a few months. It's built a long base over years, and there's massive buying, institutional buying, central bank buying below 1,200. So you have a wall of institutional demand for gold if it goes down. And mainly, I think, central bank demand. And the investors have not been there because everybody is so optimistic on the U.S. economy. They're optimistic on the dollar. They think everything is great. They're completely clueless. They're more oblivious to the reality than they were before the 08 financial crisis or the 2000 collapse. And so nobody has gold. In fact, a lot of institutions are short gold. And so, you know, almost as quickly as Bitcoin broke down, I mean, once gold takes off, it could make as violent a move in the other direction. Discouraged crypto guys should be buying silver, buying gold. You know, we started this interview, gold was down a couple of bucks. Now it's up $10. I think there's a lot of value in gold stocks. I mean, I manage a value fund, and that value fund right now has about a 20-25% weighting to gold stocks. I mean, so that's not part of the mandate. It's not a gold fund. I mean, I have a gold fund also that's 100% gold stocks. But I think gold stocks are super cheap. I mean, they're as cheap as they've ever been. And so even for people who aren't necessarily gold bugs, they should still be buying these gold stocks. They can sell them on the next double or triple. I mean, I think they're going a lot higher than that, but obviously if they double or triple, they won't be the steals they are now. So even people who are not really long-term gold bugs, I think, could benefit by having an allocation now to a sector that is ridiculously undervalued relative to historic, you know, prices. So, yeah, I mean, I think if you want to gamble on stocks, I mean, I think you have a lot more upside relative to downside in the gold stocks than you do in the FANG stocks.
Let's look forward to seeing how much of this actually plays out early 2019.
Okay, bye-bye.